This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultian Ford. Bird Cultian Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also radio host, and I'm joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, director of broadcasting, also team and recruiting reporter for Sikkim365.com. And we come to you after a week of chaos and uncertainty, and we now delve into complete uncertainty as far as Baylor and the future of the Big 12 Conference. As a few days ago, it was announced that Texas and Oklahoma, or at least it was released, that Texas and Oklahoma would be pursuing an opportunity in the SEC, and how this all came about is still being sorted through and discussed, and you can make your own conclusions on how this all came to be. But after a little bit of back and forth with the Big 12 over the weekend, Texas today, Oklahoma officially announcing their request, or what have you, their desire to enter the SEC officially. There is a meeting that's been called for Thursday with the SEC presidents, at which time we could hear further movement and a vote on Oklahoma and Texas being entered into the SEC as official members. Now, with that comes a lot of questions. What happens to the Big 12? When do they actually join the SEC? What does, you know, a team like Baylor do, obviously, and all the other eight teams that are now stranded on this island by themselves? And there's just so many moving parts, so many different ways to look at this, and so many different scenarios out there now in the future. But Grayson, how you been this week, man? Not much to really think about, not too much to rack your brain over, except for everything, basically.
Yeah, this has been an absolutely wild week. I mean, the end of the week last week, obviously, the rumor started floating around Wednesday, I believe, SEC Media Days. And yeah, Texas and OU put their request in, their formal request to the SEC for admittance July 1st, 2025. I think both you and I agree that we probably think this move is going to happen before then, but that is the date that they formally, I guess, asked for. But this is just a wild story, and I think the biggest part of the story is how many people were completely in the dark about this move. I mean, you can start with the entire Big 12. You can start with Bob Bowlesby, and that's just crazy in of itself. But then you go to the SEC, and you're like, A&M was completely left in the dark about this entire situation. Obviously, they would have voted no at the time. Flip side, you know, fast forwarding to today, I do believe the vote on Thursday will be 14-0 in favor of adding Oklahoma and Texas. I just think the writing is on the wall. I don't see A&M voting no, even though they for sure would like to do that. But I just think the complete lack of communication is just shocking to me. And it's just one of the biggest stories I think I've heard in the last 10 years. I mean, and it could turn into one of the biggest stories of the decade, depending on what happens after, which, I mean, the repercussions for this decision, I mean, it could completely change college football forever. I mean, what happens next? Super conferences? I just think that this is going to change college football for good, and we've already had so many changes, transfer portal, NIL, and this is just another one.
Yeah, I mean, but the changing of college football goes back far beyond the last 10 years. You know, everybody wants to act like, oh, it's just so crazy. It's so crazy. And, like, you're right, it's crazy, and there's more moving parts than ever. But, like, realignment, that's nothing new. That's absolutely nothing new. Now, realignment on this scale of two teams of this size moving to a conference like the SEC, that is different. But I mean, how many different conferences has Baylor been in? I mean, they've been in multiple. You know, everybody has pretty much been in multiple conferences. I mean, this will be the third conference for Texas and Oklahoma in the last 30 years. I mean, they've bounced around. So, you know, there's places where you've stuck longer than others. But I mean, let's face it, the Big 12 was a house of cards the entire time. And a big part of the reason why was Texas. And, you know, moves that they made early on, Nebraska got their feathers ruffled. Missouri was obviously unhappy. Colorado, A&M. I mean, four teams bolted that had brands attached to them for various reasons along the way, and they did nothing to add anybody outside of TCU and West Virginia, but each time they went to the table to maybe pursue further teams, I understand why they didn't, because look, I don't get the appeal of Cincinnati. I don't see how they're really game changers or, you know, some of the other teams, UCF or whatever. But now they may be the same teams you have to go back to and you know, beg a little bit to come and join the fray. I don't know. I don't know what the Big 12 is going to do. But what I do know is that they need to stick together. And they need to make OU and Texas pay them this buyout money, because it is in the range of, based on reports, around $150 million. Now, you take into account there's only eight schools now. Eight would be splitting that. Not 10, not 12. Eight schools would split that $150 million. So they would all make well over $10 million based on Oklahoma and Texas leaving. Now, that will not make up for Texas and Oklahoma leaving beyond, you know, like a few months, because they brought in so much money. But that is a significant amount of money to just throw to the wayside because you're in a hurry to go join another conference. But there is a threat that there will be those who are in a hurry to go join another conference. For example, today the Pac-12 held their media day opener, and their brand new commissioner, he came out and he was talking about realignment. He said the Pac is basically not going to stay pat, that they'll be open to looking around and they'll be open to expansion. He didn't mention anybody in particular. He was asked about Texas Tech specifically, and he didn't really say no to anything. He just kind of left it wide open, which is probably a smart move on his part, because why say a firm no to anything right now? And they are in a position as the Pac-12 to maybe come out on the other side of this a lot stronger. Grayson, one of the things that's been talked about is a Big Ten Pac-12 alliance. We've heard about the top six teams in the Pac-12 and their brands going and joining the Big Ten to make that a super conference. We've heard, I mean, every scenario under the sun. So it's going to be very, very interesting. But yeah, the latest step taken, Texas and Oklahoma have officially extended their, you know, their formal, you know, now it's not an invitation because they're the ones, but they've filed their formal request. There you go, to enter the SEC. So yeah, there will be a vote, I'm sure, this week that, like you said, will probably be 14 to nothing. I know there was a lot of talk early on that A&M and maybe like Missouri and, you know, some of these schools would get together and vote out Texas, but the money's just too large. And it's very clear, it doesn't matter what any individual school in the SEC wants. It's what the commissioner wants. And A&M learned that fast in a hurry. They tried to stand up like they were the you know, the big kid in class and object, and they got shot down in 2 seconds, and they've shut their mouth since. I mean, that's how the SEC operates. And that's something that I know a lot of people are like, well, Texas isn't going to be used to that. They only care about money, and they'll have security, and yeah, they might not have as much polar sway as they used to, but they'll be in a conference where they're a lot happier, I suppose, and that'll be enough of a makeup to not have the same kind of pull they had in the Big 12.
Yeah, so I do have a couple other notes to kind of talk about. So the first one is, man, the Big 12 should have taken Louisville back in 2013 and just ridden with 11 schools. It happened before the Big Ten added Nebraska for a couple years in there, where they had 11 schools in their conference. So I just think that would have been a better solution, because you'd be sitting here with nine teams, which still isn't ideal. But I do think Louisville is a better brand than some of the schools that they might have to go after in order to keep the Big 12 alive. So that's kind of my first thought on this as well. You mentioned Texas and OU and the fact that, you know, A&M had zero say in the SEC. I'm very curious how that works out for Texas, because over the years, they've not been okay with being the school that just kind of keeps their mouth quiet or doesn't have a lot of pull in the conference. They clearly think that they should be the top dog, even though they're not winning like the top dog. So that's kind of an interesting dilemma that could cause problems in the SEC, even though I don't think the big fish in the SEC will really care what Texas has to say at the end of the day. I do want to mention, I do think this impacts Oklahoma the most. And honestly, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me why Oklahoma wanted to do this outside of the money poll. But they've been dominant in the Big 12. This hasn't impacted them at all for making the college football playoff. They've been in it time and time again, one of the most successful programs in the country in the Big 12. So for me, just thinking at it from an Oklahoma perspective, this move does not make a whole lot of sense for them. I think they're the biggest loser in all of this. I just frankly don't understand it. Your goal is to make the college football playoff every year, and they've pretty much been able to do that. So I think they've just made their path a whole lot more difficult in the SEC, and they had an opportunity to be the big fish in the Big 12 by themselves without having to stand there with Texas as well. And you could still play them every year. So I just, it really weird that OU decided to do that. I know you want to go with your rival or your, I guess, I don't even know what they are considered anymore now that they decide to band together and go do this. But yeah, just a weird situation. I think Oklahoma might be the school that kind of hurts the most from this.
I would love to know who approached who. Did Oklahoma approach Texas about this, or did Texas approach Oklahoma?
Texas approached the SEC, so my guess is Texas approached Oklahoma.
No, they didn't, Grayson. They didn't do anything out of the bounds of rule. They didn't.
No, schools are allowed to do that. Schools are allowed to. Conferences.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So Texas was allowed to do that.
Right, yeah.
But I think based on that information, they probably asked Oklahoma, and Oklahoma was like, you know what? We can make the money work. Let's do it. But I'm just kind of, I just don't understand the appeal for Oklahoma. The goal is to make the college football playoff, and I think Texas is complaining, oh, we haven't been able to make it. Well, you haven't been good enough to make it, regardless if you're in the SEC or the Big 12, whereas Oklahoma's had a ton of success. I don't understand. I think they've made their path a whole lot harder.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the deal is. I would love to hear more from Joe Castiglione, but I find it odd, too. I know that I think it was like Stuart Mandel wrote an article about why it makes more sense for Oklahoma to stay in the Big 12 and be the lone wolf, be the top dog, and not be attached at the hip to Texas, and I agree with him. But I understand Oklahoma, the money factor is what drives all of this. It's the money and it's the security. You know, the Big 12 has been on thin ice for several years now. It's just been an out of whack conference. And one thing I do know, if the Big 12 exists in 2 years and Bob Bowlesby is still commissioner, every athletic director should be fired, including Matt Rhodes, every single one of them. That guy does not deserve his job. The fact that he was so blindsided by this is inexcusable. I mean, bottom line, and we just talked to Bob Bowlesby about a week and a half ago, and I have nothing against the guy. I have questioned some of his decisions along the way. I still think the whole TCU-Baylor thing was just such a early sign of things to come, quite honestly. That was gutless, and he had no reason to worry about what TCU was going to think about that. It was as simple as they beat you. Like, bottom line, you two played. This team beat you, you're in a tie, you play, they beat you, bottom line, boom, done. And he made it so much more complicated by riding the fence, and I will never quite forgive him for that because it did cost potentially Baylor a spot in the playoff, and maybe it wouldn't have mattered. Maybe Ohio State still gets in, and look, based on what we know about college athletics, Ohio State still would have gotten in, but at least you would have showed some backbone. That was the coward move, was to just say nothing. Greg Sankey wouldn't have said nothing. Greg Sankey would have said, hey, Auburn and Alabama played. Alabama beat them. Alabama's going to the playoff. That's my suggestion. That's what Greg Sankey would have done. But Bob Bowlesby's not Greg Sankey, obviously. And so here we are. And, yeah, I'm of the opinion, as much as, you know, Bowlesby might be good at this or that or whatever the athletic directors and presidents want to, you know, compliment him for, I'm sure he's a nice guy or whatever. But what's happening right now, inexcusable. Just bottom line. And so he's got to be out, Grayson. Like, if, obviously, there's even a commissioner spot to be had in the Big 12 in a year or two. Now, there will be in a year. It may be a year from now when it's all starting to, like, you know, it'll be less than a year because, obviously, we're on the verge of a season. But, I mean, who knows what the offseason looks like and all that? Who knows what even this season looks like? But Bowlesby's got to go, in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah. He's got to go. I mean, in 2014 is just the first example of it because the simple fact of the matter is it doesn't even matter that it was Baylor. You have to stand up for your conference.
Sure.
And Baylor was your best option because they had the win against TCU. There was simply no way that you could justify TCU being ahead of Baylor. So you have to back your best option. And Baylor was the best option at that time, and he showed no spine and showed no backbone to support his conference, which is just beyond shocking. And as time has progressed, it just seems like, I don't know, I just don't think he's the leader that this conference needs. In this situation specifically, for Texas to allegedly have been talking for months to the SEC, you got to know something. You got to read the tea leaves some.
I got a little update on that. As a matter of fact, we're talking about this and it's perfect timing. But yeah, basically to set the table, as of right now, we're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, and Texas has, along with Oklahoma, formally requested acceptance into the SEC. SEC's got a meeting on Thursday with the presidents where they would likely vote. So I mentioned that. That's kind of where we are. As far as the Big 12 goes, the messaging I'm getting from Baylor, and I've got something from Bowlesby I want to pass along here, is basically they're keeping their eyes open and they're keeping their mind open. But based on what I can tell right now, the plan is to stick to the Big 12. And a big part of that is that buyout money that Oklahoma and Texas would owe the Big 12's eight remaining schools. So as of now, the plan for Baylor is to, yes, head on a swivel, you know, look around, be mindful of everything. So the complete opposite of the last year, obviously, for those eight schools. And just try to stick together. And I think that's the best plan as of right now, is to just stick together. Yes, you look outside at opportunities, but the moment one person gets cold feet and moves on, Texas Tech to the Pac-12, for example, or Iowa State to this place, and that's when you start to get on real shaky ground, because the last thing that Texas and Oklahoma, and really Texas because it does feel like they're driving this more, but I know Oklahoma's right there, but the last thing they want to do is pay that money. The last thing they want to do is pay that money. I already saw a report last night that Kevin Eltife, who runs like the Regents or whatever down at Texas, the whole UT system, one Georgia site who's been kind of on top of this reported that he's already got the money gathered for the buyout, which is not surprising that UT would have that money. I don't know that Oklahoma's going to come up with $80 million just overnight like that. Yes, they will make it up in short order with the SEC, but that's still a big old check to write right now, no matter who you are. $80 million, $75 million, whatever it's going to end up being. So they want the Big 12 to get paranoid. They want the Big 12 to start going, oh, we better jump over here real quick. And they want it to get down to four or three teams. And they don't care what happens to these other eight schools. They do not care one iota about these other eight schools. So it doesn't bother them if they don't have to write that check and the other ones just go about their business. So that's what I think Oklahoma and Texas are hoping for. As somebody on the Big 12 side of the fence, as far as just this story goes, I think the best thing is for these eight to stick together, get that fat check, and then do what you want to do after that. But you're playing at least this season in the Big 12 with those schools, so you're sticking together for the foreseeable future anyways. Now, here's the little piece I want to pass along from Bob Bowlesby. The Big 12 Conference has learned the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas have submitted formal requests to the SEC to be considered for membership beginning with the 25-26 athletic year. The events of recent days have verified the two schools have been contemplating and planning the transition for months, and this formal application is the culmination of these processes. We are unwavering in the belief the Big 12 provides an outstanding platform for its members, athletic, and academic success. We will face the challenges head on, and we have confidence the Big 12 will continue to be a vibrant and successful entity in the near term and into the foreseeable future. So that is Commissioner Bob Bowlesby's latest, and he hasn't said anything, really, over the last two or three days while this has been bubbling. But basically, we know you've been cheating, lying, stealing in the background. Or maybe not cheating, lying, stealing, but you've been lying, or at least being shadowy, for sure. We know that you were doing that now, which you had no clue of, which is the problem. But we're just going to move forward. So what do you think of what Bob Bowlesby has to say? And he mentioned the 25-26, which of course is the big key in this whole thing as far as the money, the grant of rights, Texas and OU's exit, and all of that.
Yeah, if they wait that long, then Texas and OU don't have to pay the buyout. But gosh, that's awkward.
They're not doing that.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. And for this year, it's going to be terribly awkward. Every time these schools play each other.
And OU and Texas are both in Waco. So if anything, like I was thinking, if anything, it's the last Big 12 season. I think we can all agree on that. Because I even feel like if they replace OU and Texas or whatever they end up doing, if it stays like the Big 12 schools pretty much, change the name. change the name and just burn the brand down and start over, because it's a toxic brand at this point.
I mean, that's definitely a possibility. Yeah. Now, as far as the eight go, it's just such a complicated situation. I do agree with you. Texas and OU want them to kind of fall apart. That's the obvious goal for Texas and Oklahoma in this situation. But I think for the Big 12, yeah, you want to stay together as long as you can. And you want to add the money that Texas and OU will give you, because it could give you the option at possibly using some of that money to help get another team into the Big 12 or another couple teams in the Big 12. I think the goal here, though, and I know a lot of people have talked about adding Cincinnati, adding Memphis, adding these schools. I truly think if the Big 12 wants to last, they have to find a way to poach from other Power 5 conferences. I just think at the end of the day, if you want to maintain a Power 5 that prestige, I think you have to go get Power 5 schools. I don't think a Cincinnati or a Memphis is going to move the needle for your conference, and you're still going to be risking quite a bit. So I'm curious how that shakes out, and I'm also curious because of this. If Kansas gets offered Big 10 admins, let's just say that.
Yeah.
But let's just say they did.
Yeah.
They have to take it.
Any school has to jump if they can.
If Baylor and TCU got an ACC offer, they have to take it. And that's the unfortunate part, is that if any one of these schools get an offer to join another conference that's Power 5, they're going to have to take it. So I'm very leery about how this all shakes out. I know West Virginia in the ACC could be another natural fit as well. There's just so many moving parts, and it's going to be hard for everyone to trust each other in the Big 12 at this moment. And I think that's what makes it difficult as well, because you're always going to be kind of leery of every school now that Texas and Oklahoma just did this, and some school could be hanging you out to dry a little bit. And now I think this is really just a everyone for themselves type thing, and I don't know how that's going to shake out for all of these schools, honestly.
Yeah, Chip Brown's reporting that apparently ESPN still has a large chunk of money that they owe Texas for rights or the Longhorn Network, and that would go towards the buyout, the 100. And I've seen like 150, 160, I've seen 175, I've seen 180, so I don't know exactly.
I saw 200 even.
You saw 200, yeah. So I don't know what the damn buyout is, but it's around $150 million at average. So that's kind of where it is. So 10 plus million, like 15 million plus per school, because there's only eight remaining schools. So the Big 12 was already 10. Now they're the Big 8, calling themselves the Big 12. So, yeah, that's where leadership has taken this conference, to being the Big 10 or 10 schools in the Big 12 to 8 schools in the Big 12, where at one point they were 12 schools in the Big 12, managed to run off 4, add 2, and then run off 2 more. So what a stellar history with this conference.
Yeah, so let's get into kind of what's next for the Big 12 and Baylor. So your ideal situation is the Big 12 remains at 8, they all kind of stick together, and they just add teams. Is that kind of where you're thinking works the best?
Here's the thing, man. I'm trying to track all these tea leaves. I know there was the big talk about Iowa State and Kansas in the Big Ten. But the Big Ten Pac-12 thing, if there's any legs to that, that changes everything, because it wouldn't be both conferences absorbing each other. It would be like the top, based on what I've read. Fox now sees what ESPN's doing. They're like, oh, shoot, we better get what we can get while we can get it before they soak everything up. So the idea that I've seen floated out there would be like the top six brands. So like USC, UCLA, Oregon,
Cal,
and two others would join the Big Ten. There's even been talk about like just the conferences together scheduling each other. But I don't know. That's possible. You know, maybe there's a 20-team Super League or something.
Pac-12 and Big 8.
Yeah, 12. That would be like 26 teams, so yeah, I don't know that they could do that. And that would be kind of weird geography-wise. That's a big stretch going all of a sudden from like Southern Cal to like Wisconsin. That's kind of giant. But yeah, the idea is either they would take the six brands. So let's say in that scenario, that's what were to happen. Well, that'd be great news for the Big 12, because all of a sudden the Arizona schools are available.
Utah's
available, BYU. Colorado, yeah. Maybe. So there's your Big 12 right there. So that would be great. Now, if the two conferences in totality just cross-schedule each other, well, then the Big 12 is still screwed in this scenario, and you wouldn't need to go and expand if you were the Pac-12 or the Big 10, because you'd have this conference agreement. So that one wouldn't be as beneficial in my mind. So that's a piece that's probably not going to fall until the OU-Texas thing is done. Now, that might be done by Thursday, as we're seeing right now. So then I think you got to kind of just see what happens next. And if that's the next move, then obviously that would have massive repercussions one way or the other. So I think you have to be proactive, but you can't be almost too proactive because you might hurry up a decision and miss out on a way better opportunity if you had just remained a little more patient. So, man, I don't know. Like, yeah. there's too many moving parts, because if it was simply just Texas and Oklahoma are gone, then I think I would say, yeah, all eight stick together, get your buyout, go at Cincinnati and UCF and
try to steal Arizona's
yeah. schools and do something like that. I mean, I'm with you on the Power 5 thing. I just don't think there's any Power 5 teams that are available unless a Big 10, Pac-12 type of situation were to happen. Because otherwise, if you're an ACC, a Pac-12, a Big 10, and obviously the SEC, none of those schools are leaving their conferences. They have no reason to leave those conferences because those conferences are sturdy. The ACC's contract still has years on it. SEC and Big Ten are never going to die. And the Pac-12 is actually in a stronger spot than the Big 12 now. So, and they have actually 12 teams. So I don't know why, if you were Arizona or Arizona State or Colorado, you'd be in any rush to leave a sure thing with a brand new commissioner and then go join this conference that's basically begging people. So
I think it's the domino that you mentioned that has to fall. It's the Oregon, USC. They need the Pac-12's big brands to leave, because when that happens, then it becomes a totally different conversation. Then you're just trying to find out who's going to be the fourth conference, because then the Big 12 actually has a shot at taking Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado.
But if not, then you're looking at, okay, and I don't know the exact term. Like, I don't know how long they have to wait before splitting up to have that money. You know what I'm saying? So, if they have to stick together for a year, or if, hey, you just play through the next couple years, they pay the buyout, and then you can go your separate way.
It's through the contract. So, it's through.
So, 24-25.
Yeah.
So, that's right. I did read that the other day. So, yeah, man, that makes things really complicated. And, you know, you already hear that, the Texas Tech mentioned at Pac-12 Media Days and the non-denial about whether or not there's been any interest or talks there. So, there'd be one team, and, you know, they're already at eight as it is. They can't go below four, but that's only four more teams, Bolton. So, yeah, I'm preaching patience on this, because I don't know what the next big domino to fall is going to be. And I think we'd be all naive to think that there's not going to be more dominoes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think, ideally, though, Baylor somehow, along with TCU, finds themselves in the ACC. I think that is the most ideal situation. Now, is it super likely? Probably not, but I do think it's possible. I see a path to it, and I think that would be the most ideal. I think the fit is much better in the ACC than it would be in the Pac-12. And so that's what I would hope happens for Baylor. But yeah, there's so many dominoes that could still fall. I mean, there's going to be a question of, do these super conferences, does it end up being the 32 teams? Is it 16 teams? Is it 64 teams? If it's 32, Baylor's toast. They're not going to be in that 32. But 64, I think they could be in that 64, be in the mix for being one of those 64 teams to make a super conference.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not going to be 32, because there's just no room for everybody. I mean, you would have to contract all the other conferences, it would have to be there was that rumor the other day, which I think has already been shot down basically, but Ohio State and Michigan have talked to the SEC about, and I saw that on Saturday or something, and I haven't seen it since. And I think somebody even just shot holes through it. I don't know. I mean, I don't believe anything 100% now. I mean, if they were talking to them, I wouldn't be surprised. But that'd be stupid on the part of any Big Ten school like Ohio State to leave your sturdy position to just go join and be one of a dozen other schools that are just like you. So, yeah, 32 would be too small. There's just too many teams. I mean, there's 14 in the SEC alone. There's, 14 in the Big Ten. Well, hey, there's still a bunch of good schools in the ACC, and there's some good schools in the Pac-12, and there's still some potential contenders in the Big 12. So you'd be leaving a lot of people out of the mix, potentially. I just don't see it being that small of a field.
Yeah, I don't either, but it's just something that becomes more likely because of the situation that's happened. I do think 64 will end up being the number, But I'm just curious, like Notre Dame, for instance, I think they're going to be forced to join the ACC.
I don't think you can force Notre Dame to do anything.
You can't, but I think they're going to have to. I mean, or else they're going to get left out. Why keep them in if they're not going to join a conference? Like, they would be the only oddball.
What have they been doing this entire time, basically?
I know, but right now there's so many teams that are still in quote-unquote contention. I think if you get rid of, you know, you trim that fat a little bit down to 64, what are you going to do? 64 teams and then Notre Dame?
It's not like you're holding March Madness. You don't need 64 teams exactly for a tournament. I mean, it's still going to be, if anything, an expanded playoff, but that's still going to be pretty much, you know, what, 8 teams? So,
but do you think the expanded playoff could end up being just those 64 teams?
Eventually, not right now. So I don't know what the rush would be for Notre Dame as well, because, like, Notre Dame's good regardless. Like, they don't have to join a conference. They are an independent, and no one really questions it. And I know people are like, well, they should. But, I mean, if you're Notre Dame, are you sacrificing that independence that you have to be under the mercy of a conference just like everyone else? You've shown you're willing to do it to an extent. But to actually fully do that and have to play by the rules just like Louisville or just like Michigan State, I don't think they'd want to do that. I think there's something unique to being an independent and being as big of, I mean, it's Notre Dame. Yeah. Like, I think it's overrated as hell, honestly, because we're talking about history from like the 50s, but it's still Notre Dame. You know, it's still that brand. And so, you know, they have the ability, but I know what you're saying. I just don't think that they have to be in a rush or feel like they're being forced to do anything, because at the end of the day, no matter if they're independent or they're in a conference, they're still going to get consideration for whatever championship tournament there is.
Yeah, they're just a big fish.
They're a big domino. There, you know? Yeah, because so. because like you said, if they were to decide, hey, let's join the ACC. Well, then the ACC wants one more, and they want to round out, and that has a domino effect. So yeah, I mean they are a wild card in this, but I just don't see what their purpose. I don't see why that would be the best move for Notre Dame, is all I'm saying. I think they're good where they are right now. But, yeah, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. So, I don't know, man. It's just all wild. It's wild how much, just in 1 week, I mean, we were at Big 12 Media Days a week ago. Everything was cool, fine. Leaving the AT&T Stadium parking lot was like, wow, that was really chill. Seems like the Big 12's in a good place. And, man, just days later, this pops.
Yeah, and it's going to be a very, very long process. I think I don't even know if it can be long, but I just think it's going to take a lot of conversations, and hopefully Baylor was somewhat prepared for this.
I don't think so.
No, yeah, and that's the problem, is that I don't think anyone in the Big 12 was, so now you have to just kind of scramble, and that's where everyone becomes just, it becomes a very scary situation, because everyone's starting to look out for themselves. And there's going to be a lot of conversations, I think, over the next month or so to try to figure out what the next move is. I would say the one move that I just simply hope doesn't happen is that Baylor joins the American or something along those lines. And I just think that's such a would be such a terrible move until you know exactly what's going to happen. So stay pat unless a Power 5 offer comes from like an ACC or a Pac-12, and then go from there is kind of what I would think is going to happen and kind of where I think Baylor should go.
Yeah, well, the Pac-12 commish said that the whole like academic standing thing is not going to be a hindrance on potential expansion, so that was good news for Tech because, I mean, I'm not even knocking them. I mean, I could call them a, you know, diploma mill, which they are, but, I mean, that was a concern as far as, you know, acceptance into the Big Ten that started getting brought up a lot. Well, no, Iowa State's an AAU school, and so they would fit right in, but based on the Big Ten tea leaves I was reading, they don't want Kansas and Iowa State. They don't want those teams. And I think it would be, based on what I was reading, a very long shot that those teams would make it into the Big Ten. I think the Pac-12 merger combination thing is probably of far more interest to them, a much bigger swath of the country, more intriguing and sexy programs in Oregon and USC than in Kansas and Iowa State. I mean, and be honest with you, and I'm not sitting here like Baylor's a juggernaut by any means. I know their problems that they have, and I know the attractive parts of Baylor that they have as well, but, you know, I had somebody say, like, well, what do you think of Iowa State? I just don't see why you'd be interested, honestly, because Matt Campbell suddenly has a good football team. Well, that happens everywhere at some point or another. Kansas State, like, what's their pull?
No, I mean, they're in trouble, yeah.
I think they'd be, like, the least interesting of everybody remaining in the Big 12.
I think, personally, I think Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, and maybe Texas Tech are probably the four that I think are the top dogs. But then it's also, like, geographics-wise, I mean, Kansas is kind of in Big Ten country a little bit, and they have the good basketball program, which makes that slightly appealing.
Right.
They could make the Big Ten, honestly, the best basketball conference in the country. There's already – I mean, they've already been in the mix, but Kansas could push them to another level. I think those four, though, are the top brands when you're talking college football and success at other sports as well, but – that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to go in their favor, though, by any means.
No, not at all. So, yeah, man, it's crazy what all is going on. I mean, we could talk for another hour on it easily. Yeah. I mean, just all those different scenarios. So, as of right now, Big 12 is down to 8 schools, basically, and they're sticking together as of right now. And the Pac-12 is open for business, and the Big 10 seems open for business, although I don't, you know, there's a lot of rush to judgments, too. There's a lot of people like, well, then now the Big Ten doesn't have to do anything. They got buku money right now as is. And, you know, the thing that people don't think about, like, oh, go add Iowa State and Kansas and dilute what you're making. They're not bringing in any extra money.
And it keeps them from getting Oregon, USC. It keeps them from being major players in those situations, which I don't think they want to do. That's the thing. The ACC can't get Oregon. It's just too far. They can't get those schools. So I think the Big Ten's probably the team that I would bet they're going to stay pat until they figure out the Pac-12 situation. But the other conference, ACC is the one that I think could be potentially looking to make moves because it's all about keeping up with the Joneses. And honestly, if they think the Big Ten has a shot at getting Oregon and USC, you got to think the ACC is probably thinking, okay, how can we make our conference stronger and make sure that we're keeping up numbers-wise and just with our conference's prestige?
Yeah, so I think as far as fits go, Baylor in the ACC would be the best one. I mean, but I don't have like a long spiel on why it would make sense. It just, you know, geographically, some of the similar schools, basketball conference, I think that would be their best bet, but I don't know that the ACC is looking around right now. I think they're like a lot of other people going, okay, we've got our contract set for a few more years. We're not in any rush. We'll just kind of see how this plays out. So I think where to look now is obviously Oklahoma and Texas and the fight with the Big 12 that's forthcoming. That's what to pay attention to. And obviously the fragile nature of the Big 12 and whether or not these 8 schools are going to be able to actually stick together long enough to be able to get a really big payday that with the departure of OU and Texas, quite frankly, they're going to need that money. All of those schools will need that $15 to $18 million that's sitting out there waiting on them right now. Right now it's basically a waiting game, and it's just a bunch of stuff like the last 45 minutes of what we're talking about. I mean, that's what everybody in college sports is doing right now is figuring out, including the administrators. I mean, they're figuring out all this stuff that's going on. So, yeah, the Big 12, safe to say, was completely blindsided, Baylor included. Had no idea this was coming. I wonder about the future of Bob Bowlsby, but OU and Texas are gone, barring some surprise vote by the SEC schools, which is not going to happen because they don't deviate from Greg Sankey. So, OU and Texas last year in the Big 12 looks like it'll be coming up this season. But we got plenty more to talk about on the boards and on Sikkim 365 Radio about all this as we've been doing the last few days. Something else coming up this week, the NBA draft. Obviously, some Baylor flavor in this one, Grayson.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's on Thursday, so it's going to be coming up really quickly. And I thought it'd be a good idea for Craig and I to talk a little bit about kind of the potential landing spots for Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler, kind of what at least we've been hearing on potential landing spots, and then also the best fit. So it looks like for Davion, number 7 at Golden State seems to be where a lot of people have been projecting him for the longest time. But everything I keep hearing is that Golden State is going to trade that pick. And if they trade that pick, I do think whoever trades into that selection probably won't take Davion Mitchell because the whole thought behind the Warriors taking him at 7 is that he'd be an instant impact guy. He's already a little bit older. If that pick does get traded, I think he'll fall a little bit. And then things will start getting really interesting for him if he falls past that pick, because I've been hearing New Orleans, they're one that maybe could take him at 10. That'd be a nice fit for him with Zion. And, of course, Lonzo, I think Lonzo Ball could be leaving New Orleans as well pretty soon. So he'd have a nice position to get early playing time and really provide a spark for that team. They also traded Eric Bledsoe this past week, so they really could use another really good defender at the guard position. 12, the Spurs, I think that'd be an interesting fit. The Spurs probably would have to trade away one of their guards, whether it be Derek White or DeJounte Murray or Lonnie Walker, which honestly makes sense for them. They really need to – they got a lot to figure out there, and I don't think they've found their starting point guard of the future quite yet. 13 to the Pacers makes a ton of sense, being the second ball handler next to Malcolm Brogdon. I think he'd do a nice job there. They got Rick Carlisle, have a pretty good culture. I think he could help them win now. And I don't believe he'll get past 15, which would be the Wizards at 15. I don't think he'll fall past that, but I have been hearing rumblings that he could drop a lot further than I think most people were expecting.
Why is that?
So it's a lot of different reasons. So the first one is, like I mentioned with Golden State, they're in win-now mode. There aren't a lot of teams in the lottery that are in win-now mode. Most of those teams are going to try to take guys with high upside, like Jonathan Kuminga, or Josh Giddey, who's out of Australia. They'll take a younger guy because Davion's 23. So I know people have concerns about that. So that's the first part. The other part is fit. A lot of the teams, for some reason, inside the lottery have good guard play, have point guards, have guys to fit that role, but don't have wings. So a lot of them are looking at the wing position as opposed to guard, and that could also be a reason for the potential fall. Now, let me reiterate. If the Warriors keep the pick at 7, I do think there's a good chance that he goes to the Warriors. I think that's a great fit with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. They'll probably add another really good player as well. He'd have a shot at winning a championship his first year, and he'd be on TV a lot. That would be awesome for Baylor fans to be able to see him play for the Warriors, because I think he'd have a ton of success. But if he doesn't get taken there, I do think it might be a long waiting game for not only Davion, but for all of the Baylor fans, really.
Well, I mean, that's the draft. I mean, that's the way that it goes sometimes, is you got the Aaron Rodgers moment. So yeah. If you drop, you drop, and you just got to keep a brave face in that green room, because that's going to be played for forever and ever and ever and ever, especially if you turn out to be an Aaron Rodgers and you turn out to be a really good player. They'll play it even more, your bad green room moment. So, yeah, hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully he kind of goes in line with what most mocks have been saying. But, if that does happen, then hopefully he's not waiting too long.
Yeah, and I keep hearing, and this is such an interesting statistic, how poorly guys who are drafted 22 and up are in the NBA. They really don't pan out often. And they usually always struggle their first year just adapting to the NBA game. But I'd also say, okay, well, yeah, that might be true. But what about how many 19-year-olds have completely busted in the NBA draft? Many. And so I just think if you watch Davion play, there is no reason to think he won't be an elite-level defender at the NBA level guarding guards. There's zero reason to have concerns with that. I think he's the best defender in the entire class, perimeter defender, that is. So I just think he's a natural fit there. We just saw a team in the NBA Finals win the Finals while having a guard who wasn't a score-first guard in Drew Holiday, but an elite defender who really gave Phoenix a whole lot of problems. So Davion can really fit that mold, and that's why if the Warriors can't get a haul for pick 7 and can't go out and get a Bradley Beal or a Damian Lillard, I think they keep that pick and do take Davion Mitchell. But again, if they don't, there's some other options. He won't slip past 15, so I still think he'll find his way in the lottery most likely. But it could be a long wait for Davion, and we'll see what happens. But I do think he has a great shot at being a good NBA player, and hopefully these teams kind of recognize that instead of taking just these horrible flyers on guys who just don't fit in anywhere in the NBA, guys who can't shoot, who don't have the skill set for the NBA, get drafted all the time. So hopefully NBA teams are able to see through that a little bit.
All right, what about Jared Butler? And we'll get into the mailbag.
Yeah, so Jared Butler, I've seen some really interesting mocks recently, having him go to the Knicks at 19, which is the highest I've seen him go in any mock draft, is the pick number 19 to the Knicks. I kind of hope he doesn't go to the Knicks. I just think that that's kind of not a great place to play. I think it's also a team.
Although, I will say, you know, if they are actually on the right track, I mean, he could be a star in New York.
He could. I don't think they're on the right. I mean, I know they made the playoffs and stuff, but like.
It was progress.
They got knocked out so quick in the first round. That team is still a long way to go.
Sure, you know? But you need to add Jared Butler and guys like that. I'm just saying, if they were actually onto something, that he would be a major star in New York.
He would be for sure, but I actually like my kind of hope for Jared Butler is that he goes the next pick at pick 20, which is to the Atlanta Hawks, the team that beat the Knicks 4-1 in the playoffs. They have a star in Trae Young, and I think that would allow Jared Butler to really flourish being a sixth man for that team. I think he could be an absolute star in that role as sixth man for the Hawks, and also a guy who probably could get big minutes in crunch time depending on how the Hawks adjust their lineups. But yeah, that would be kind of the best fit, in my opinion. The other options I've heard, 22 to the Lakers, 23 or 24 to Houston. Obviously, that would keep him in Texas, which would be cool as well. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. The earlier, the better in Jared Butler's case, in my opinion. So the Knicks would be cool because of that. Pick number 19, that would be very, very nice for Jared Butler. And obviously a big market, which would be, I think, one of those interesting storylines to follow. And he could be the day one starter, which is a unique opportunity in of itself. The only other place that he could probably get that is Houston. I think Jared's going to have a good draft. I think everyone was a little concerned he might either A, not be able to take part in the NBA draft, not be able to play in the NBA, or somehow fall out of the first round. I think there were legit concerns about that, but I think he's found a nice solid spot between 19 and 24. I think he'll be picked somewhere in there.
All right, so two guys you would expect to see going in the first round this Thursday night. I guess that'll be on ESPN, I would imagine, and looking forward to seeing where those two land. And you know, not sure what the future holds for like Macy Oteague or Mark Vidal. I mean, they're not going to get drafted. Vidal's certainly not. I wouldn't expect at all. So we'll see, you know, as far as like free agent deals and things like that, what may come of the rest of the potential guys, you know. But Butler and Mitchell are obviously going to be drafted in the first round. If they're not, then something went really wrong. But yeah, two first round picks will be a nice little extra feather in a growing little set of feathers for Scott Drew in the basketball program. We'll definitely add a couple more on Thursday that will be beneficial to the program in a variety of different ways. And I saw where they, you know, Isaiah Austin was back this week, and they have all the vets coming back. So that's got to be a fun time over there at the Farrell Center. All right, anything before we get into the mailbag here?
No, we got long mailbags. We got riled through them.
Do we? Okay.
Here, I'll start with the first one. The bare minimum, let's start with the elephant in the room, boxers or briefs? Briefs for me.
Boxers. But like the boxer briefs.
Well, okay, boxer yeah. briefs. Yeah, if we're gonna, yes, that. That
yeah,
would be
boxer
the choice.
Briefs. Yeah. I don't do tighty whities.
No,
and I don't do I don't like the loose boxers
nope.
because they're just like constantly riding up right. and just not fitting right. So yeah, I do the boxer briefs. All right, Scotty, be the Baylor King. And I'm kind of distracted here. I'm gonna rifle through these, but I'm also like glancing at Twitter and just seeing all the rumors and stuff. And you know, I mentioned the ESPN buyout money that could be coming UT's way to at least pay their end from the Longhorn Network, unpaid, I guess, money owed to them. But, man, it's crazy how many people are getting Twitter followings by just throwing stuff against walls and acting as though they have inside sources, because there's just wild stuff being speculated on.
Yeah.
I've already seen tech go to both the Big Ten and the Pac-12 just today in the last 5 minutes. Guaranteed on both. So they will be dueling conferences for Texas. I mean, it's crazy. And I know this is what realignment is, but yeah, just get ready for a lot more of that. Scotty, be the Baylor King. If you have to pick some trap games for OU Iowa State this year in football, what would those be and why?
Yeah, so against each other, obviously, is the first one because they both could easily
lose. Yeah.
Someone has to lose that. For Oklahoma, it's at Baylor, at Oklahoma State, and then, of course, the Cotton Bowl playing against Texas. That has to be on the list. But those are the three that I could see them losing outside the Iowa State game. They won't lose four times, but I could see them maybe losing to Iowa State and losing one more or only losing once in one of these trap games. Iowa State, it is 100% the Iowa matchup because they lose that one every year, it seems. The other two that I have written down are at Baylor and then a little bit later in the year at West Virginia. So Baylor on both lists, but that's just because Baylor's schedule is very favorable. But again, I expect OU to win double-digit games, whether that's 11-1 or 11-2, something along those lines. As for Iowa State, I expect them to go somewhere between to win 9 or 10 games probably this year.
Yeah, I mean, 9 or 10's got to be the floor for both of those teams. And November 20th at Oklahoma will be the matchup between the Cyclones and the Sooners. So that'll be interesting. They'll be in Lubbock, Iowa State, the week before. They got West Virginia 2 weeks before that. So they got a kind of interesting little stretch between October 30th and November 20th at West Virginia, home against Texas, at Texas Tech, at Oklahoma. That's going to be a little bit of a juggernaut or a gauntlet there for Iowa State. And then TCU to cap it all off like on a Friday night. So their schedule's a little weird. But
yeah, and Iowa and Baylor early in the schedule.
Yeah, yeah, Baylor, their first conference game in Waco. So, yeah, that's an interesting schedule. And Oklahoma, I think they're each other's own worst enemy. And then, yeah, I think Baylor's in a prime position to play spoiler. TCU could play spoiler. Texas could play spoiler. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities because I think a lot of teams are expecting to be much better this year, but it's going to be tough to knock either one of them off, certainly. And Scotty added, I appreciate it and sick them also. I'd appreciate prayers this time for my family as we lost my paternal grandmother 2 days after her 80th birthday last week and have time for peace and grieving for her passing. So sorry for your loss, Scotty. I'm a man without any grandparents anymore. I went from having all four to about 2 years ago. I lost the three remaining in like a year and a half. And that was pretty freaking brutal to go from 4-3 and then 3-0 like overnight. And so, yeah, man, that's tough stuff. And it doesn't get really any easier, honestly. Like, you still miss your grandparents, but, you know, it does get a little bit easier as time goes by, like most things do. So, man, just keep your head up and just think of the good things. And sorry for your loss. Joe Bear, this year, taking into account the recent conference shakeup, I really want to beat Texas in football. Give me a percentage chance that Baylor beats Texas. Let's just answer this first.
So my percentage chance, I have it right now right around 40%. I do think Baylor will be the underdog, but I personally do think Baylor ends up winning this one. So me putting it 40% is really just adding in the fact that Baylor will probably be the underdog in that matchup. But I think they're primed to beat Texas this year. I think it's a great spot. They play them at home. Steve Sarkisian, new head coach. That doesn't always go very well. I think Baylor's got a great shot beating them.
One thing that's great about the Big 12 collapsing in on itself is that no matter if Steve Sarkisian's successful or not, I don't have to worry about it. Like, I don't have to care at all. I don't have to see him at Big 12 media days. So for someone like me, this is actually, like, in a roundabout way, great news. But no, I'd put it at like 40%, somewhere along those lines. Like, I don't think it's like really 80-20. I don't think there's that much of a differential. So I go 60-40 in favor of Texas. Joe also goes on to say, I know this is not likely or very realistic, but is there a possibility we could kick their ass like in 2019? My hope is to send Texas off to SEC with a Baylor beatdown. Keep up the good work. You're both appreciated. Well, Joe, so are you. Thank you very much for the questions.
Yeah, and I like I said, I think there's a very good possibility that they could beat them. They're going to be right in that matchup. I don't know if they beat them as convincingly as 2019. That was an absolute beatdown. I know the score wasn't that bad, but it was bad. It was really bad. So I do think Baylor could beat them by a touchdown or so.
Has Stomo627, has anyone asked Mac about Baylor really trying to get the money back right now that the Big 12 has been holding now that everything with the conference is in question? Well, Stomo, we have asked Mac Rhodes about this money so many times, and nothing has changed, like nothing. And what people need to realize is in that initial agreement or whatever, there was a time period that this was involved with. So it's not like they got cleared by this entity, and that means it's all free reign. Like, there's – like another hoop or whatever. Like, I don't know all the details because at this point, like, I'm just so tired of the money being withheld that I do know it's there. We asked Bowlsby about it like a week ago, and he talked about it, and he said that it's probably coming sooner than later. But as you can imagine, Baylor's money is not their priority right now, just like it wasn't when we asked Bowlsby about it. And I understand that's not what Baylor fans want to hear, but, like, especially, like, right now in this very moment, the last thing they are thinking about is Baylor's money that they owe them. But rest assured, yeah, Baylor is going to see how this is charting, and it's either going to be a lawsuit or that money is going to come to them a lot, you know, faster, like it should have, you know, originally.
Yeah, and I was going to bring up the Bowlsby comment because he said there was a good chance that the money will go back. I mean, that'd be a nice little check for Baylor if they got that money and the 150 or 160 million, their cut of that as well.
Which I averaged it out last night. It would be, if you took 150 and 8 teams, I think it was like nearly $16 million or something
plus
along those lines.
36 is what the Big 12 held, right, from Baylor? Was it 36?
I don't even remember at this point.
I think
point.
It was 36.
Yeah. So, I mean, they'd be looking at like a $50 million bump. So,
pretty nice.
Yeah, I think if, you know, they were obviously in dire need of it, they would probably be banging on the doors and begging for them, be like, look, we have to have this money. They've been able to make do. And I know that's been a burning question now for, well, like 5 years since they took the money. And I'll just say that Bowlsby talked about it. You can go back to the interview and listen to his response to it. But, like, nothing to update you since that, like, a week and a half ago. And obviously he's been pretty busy since then. TD Steele, is Bowlsby a lying, conniving piece of crap in on this from the beginning, or a spineless, clueless bagman for the Horns? What did he know and when did he know it? We have paid that guy a hell of a lot of money, and he certainly has not represented the entirety of the conference.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier, but that guy was clueless. He had no idea what was happening to his conference, which is honestly unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
But we went ad nauseum talking about Bowlsby. We both believe he should be replaced, and yes, I believe he was clueless. I don't think he was trying to do any favors for the Longhorns. I think it was just simply, he's been clueless since the day he became Big 12 commissioner.
Yes, he has. And, you know, I said my piece earlier, he's got to go. If this conference stays together past this year, he's got to go. He has to.
Yeah.
And when he goes, that money better arrive with his departure. But, yeah, we're not going to talk to Mac probably for a little while. Not this week, it looks like. Wonder why. His vacation was last week when all this news broke. So, I mean, we'll get back around to it, but, I mean, honestly, we've asked him so many times about this, and the answer is not changing. It's just, it's waiting, and so we'll see when that day finally comes. But, big payday if they can keep the Big 12 together, potentially a huge payday for Baylor. I initially thought, too, like, man, maybe Bowlsby did know something, but, like, that would just be such a bad business move on his part that would be stupid. Like, that would be – there's nothing he would gain from helping OU and Texas out in this situation that would be worth it to screw over the other eight and his position as commissioner, even if it leads to him knowing it's going to dissolve. That's still just a very bad business move to make. So I thought that initially, too, but I think he is – feel him dumber than anybody on earth right now, quite frankly. Sammy Graysbeer, what do you want to happen to the remaining eight schools? What do you think's happening to the remaining eight schools? We talked about this. I say stick together till you get your money and then do what you got to do after that. If somebody does come to the table and says, hey, ACC, hi, Baylor, we want you, it's going to be awfully hard to say no to.
Yeah, I mean, I would like for them to stick together, but I think at the end of the day, they're probably not all going to end up in the same conference. And that maybe isn't the most, you know, wanted answer by everyone, but I just have a feeling that someone's going to slip up and go ahead and take an invite from somewhere. We don't even know where. And then I think the others will just have to try to find a spot. I just, that's kind of where my thinking is right now.
I'm really wondering how much some of these Big 12 brands are completely overrating themselves and acting like this is just going to be a simple slide into these other conferences. Like, yeah, you know, like I was talking about earlier, Iowa State, oh, we're just going to go to the Big 10, and Kansas is going to go to the Big 10. I don't think you realize the Big 10 probably don't want Iowa State. And as good as they are in basketball, probably don't want Kansas either. You know, I don't know what you do if you're K-State. I mean, they're like the least appealing of any school, even with Baylor's scandals in the past. Yeah. They're still far more appealing than K-State is. K-State's just like generic. I mean, they're just – and I love the program, respect it. Bill Snyder's great. He had a tweet the other day like calming everybody down, and everybody needed it. And it was like, oh, Bill Snyder said it? Awesome. Nothing but respect. But like, as far as like something that stands out about them, it's just,
what are they good at?
Exactly.
They're like, not good at anything.
There's just, it's just middle of the road as middle of the road gets. And again, no disrespect, but it's just the truth. And so, yeah, I don't think it's going to be just, all right, let's jump over here real quick. And I don't think Tech's just sliding over. So there's a lot to be sorted out. But, yeah, I want the eight remaining to get their daggum money from OU and Texas. That's what I want first and foremost. Thank you for the question. Sammy Grace Bear, let's roll through the rest of these here. Nagiri, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name. I heard a rumor that OU and UT were considering going to SEC. Any validity to the rumor? Yes, and they've applied for membership as of about 3 hours ago. Doc Crowell, does Baylor have any sincere NIL success so far to point out to recruits? Alabama can say they're in. Well, I mean, we're comparing it to the million-dollar Alabama quarterback, really. Quarterback already has $1 million lined up, but so far all I've heard is some guys playing video games or Meyer doing a meet and greet. Well, I mean, he took like the one example that's like out of the world, out of this world as far as NIL goes. And as David Shaw, Stanford head coach, was saying earlier today when he was asked about name, image, likeness, and he was asked about Alabama's quarterback specifically, he said, I don't think that's market value. That's Alabama value.
Right.
And he's absolutely right.
There's a huge difference there. And also, he's not their incoming QB. He was on campus for a year. He will be their starting quarterback this year. Quarterbacks are going to hold the highest market value and the highest draft picks. Those will hold the highest market value for sure. And when you're at Alabama and you're the quarterback and you're a redshirt freshman, so you're for sure going to be there for 2 years, I mean, that's a huge deal. And that's why he got the money that he did. Baylor's not going to have success like that unless they simply get just some all-world player, all-world quarterback, and even then probably won't. As far as Baylor goes, there hasn't been anything that's like crazy notable that I've heard of yet. I know there's been some little ones here and there. I know Bearskins added Jalen Petrie and I believe, was it Terrell Bernard? Were those the two?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was two guys on the Baylor football team. And then, of course, we saw the Siaki Aika with the video game playing. He's got one line.
Squirrel, not
Terrell Bernard. Yeah, Squirrel and Jalen Petrie. And then, I think it was something along those lines. And then who was the other one? Matt Meyer. Matt Meyer has the other deal as well.
Yeah, I would say this. Alabama's Alabama, and like David Shaw, who's a very smart man, said, that's the Alabama value, not the market value. So I don't think we're going to be seeing a whole lot of those million-dollar type deals. And I think Saban may have even been exaggerating just a tad. I guarantee it's in the high 100,000s, but, I mean, $1 million, I mean, we'll see. But, yeah, that's certainly not going to be the norm. And I understand the concern that some people have, but look around. Who all else is signing big NIL deals? I don't see many. I mean, I see some here and there, Grayson, but quite honestly, since the first week, it's been relatively quiet pretty much across the board. Like, a bunch of people sign stuff right away, and, like, I don't see anything now. I mean, basically, I see, like, a post maybe every other day of somebody doing something, but, like, this idea that it was just going to be free reign and everybody's going to be, you know, pawning this and that, that hasn't been the case at all.
Yeah, and let me correct myself. It was actually Raleigh Tejada and Squirrel. Okay. Those were the two that got the Bearskins apparel NIL kind of deal that they're going with. So it was those two and then the other ones that we mentioned.
Yeah.
Not Jalen Petrie or Terrell Bernard.
Okay. So, I mean, as far as NIL goes, though, like, I'm saying that...
No, you're right.
Yeah, there hasn't been a whole lot of, like, craziness going on, so... Outside of like the Alabama story or like the volleyball player who's getting $100,000 for being popular on TikTok like 3 weeks ago. I mean, what has been the
Oregon defense lineman who's probably going to go like number one in the draft. He got a huge, but again, that's such an outlier and Baylor doesn't have anyone on their roster that is that level of marketability. And if they did, then they'd have a pretty good market deal.
I don't know if they've had a star period outside of maybe like Corey Coleman in the last several years that would be somebody that you would think would be pulling a lot of money in NIL.
Davion Mitchell would have been an interesting one.
I'm talking about football,
but yeah, football wise, yeah, I mean, yeah, RG3 would be the one that you point
but
to in Corey Coleman, but that's
10 years,
right?
You know, that's a long time now, so almost 10 years actually. Yep, it did, yep, right. 10 years. Yep, geez, Louise. So, we'll see. I think, what will be more interesting to monitor, as far as your question goes, Doc, will be to see how things change during the season. I think that's when the next step will be, and we'll see really like what this NIL thing is, because these dead summer months, I don't know. I just think it's kind of slowed down and not much is happening right now.
I'm curious when you have a riser, like a Lamar Jackson, who no one really knew about, and then the season starts and the dude's just taking off, or Johnny Football, which always happens every year. What does that look like? Because I think that's just going to be a battle, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think they'll just bids, offers, and then they'll take the highest one. But that will be, you're exactly right, that'll be the most interesting, I believe.
Yeah, I think everybody was waiting for those floodgates to open, and then they realized, oh, wait, it's the middle of the summer, and no one's even on campuses, and, like, what were we all getting excited about? And so there was that initial rush, but wait about a month, and I think we'll start seeing more of that coming back. Doc Crowell, well, one other thing, Tristan Ebner is able to hold a camp this whole sponsor thing and all of that, and so some of that stuff is coming too. Doc Crowell, does Baylor have any sincere okay, you already did that one, Craig. Duh.
Yeah.
Three Bears, what are the coaches saying about how NIL court decision and the UTOU exit will affect recruiting for the upcoming signing period? I haven't heard anything from the coaches. I don't know, Grayson can maybe speak to that more so than I can, but I know that NIL is something they're very on top of and trying to be very proactive with, and that's all I know as far as that goes. It's something that they're working with, and nothing on my end as far as the coaches' reactions to UT and OU so far.
Yeah, I mentioned some of it in the notes for today, the recruiting notes, just kind of talking about where recruits are at as far as the OU-UT decision. I think all the recruits are honestly excited about the NIL thing, but I don't think it's really going to impact Baylor too much, because I think everyone's still trying to figure out exactly what that means and kind of the best options for the student-athletes. So I don't think really there are high expectations from commits on, oh, I need to be getting this much money, not currently at least. I think it'll turn into that, but I think right now everyone's just kind of trying to figure out exactly what the NIL decision means and kind of what's the best way to market yourself and brand yourself. So I think that's where they're at with the NIL. The OUUT thing, though, it's interesting. It's very interesting. I think commits are very leery on what's going to happen with Baylor. From what I've been able to gather, everyone's super locked into the Bears. I don't see any decommitments currently, but I will say I think everyone's on edge and they want to know what's going to happen. And right now the coaches don't know what's going to happen. So that's the problem, is that there can't be any communication on it because there's no answer to it yet.
Right.
So it just kind of is what it is right now. And I hate that that's the answer I have to give, but that's the same answer the staff is really giving to recruits right now, because they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know if they're going to add players. They don't know if they're going to be playing in the Pac-12 and having to, you know, travel that far for games. And that changes things, obviously, for recruits. They don't know if they'll be in the ACC, which might be a bigger poll. I mean, there's just a lot of big conversations that are going to be coming up, but they're not currently being had because right now there just simply isn't enough information for it.
Well, and, you know, that's, you know, somewhat worrisome. Definitely SEC schools have an advantage of those that are locked in. The Big 12 schools, though, you know, now Texas and OU are going to be hitting the recruiting trail with the whole SEC banner. Be very interesting to see just kind of what that looks like. And A&M has to be the most pissed of anybody, that's for sure. I mean, they have to be the most upset out of anybody. But at least, you know, in Baylor's case, Tech's dealing with the same thing. Iowa State, Oklahoma State, TCU, I mean, they're all in the same boat. So until there's further clarity, there's going to be a lack of clarity, unfortunately. Thank you for the questions, Three Bears. C. Mittness. We'll close this out this week. How does our class finish in these two scenarios? One, we finish regular season 11-1, but news breaks, we are headed to the American Athletic Conference, which I know you touched on that earlier. You said you wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like that either. I think any scenario where you're joining up with Baylor, with SMU or Houston, unless you are forced to do that, you are not inviting them to the Big 12, and you're not joining up with them. That does nothing but lower your brand by joining up with them. And it's not because they suck. It's because they are lower level than you at this point in time. So you would be going down to their level. And then there's, what's the pull if you're a kid in Dallas and SMU and Baylor are the exact same school, basically, except for SMU's closer to home, but they're in the same conference. They're in this, you know, Baylor has advantages right now. So that's something that I think they need to be very mindful of, and not just blending in and just becoming another SMU, TCU, Houston, whatever. So yeah, what do you think? 11-1, but they're headed to the AAC.
Yeah, I mean they're gonna drop. They're gonna lose a lot of commits. They'll probably still finish top 50, just because I think a lot of guys are already bought into the brand. And you go 11-1, that gives you that UCF push. So maybe top 40, just because you had a really, really good year. But dropping down into the group of five is going to have severe consequences in recruiting, I fear.
Well, they don't have to, because they're still in it, even with OU and Texas leaving. They're still a Power 5 conference, even at eight teams, based on the rules.
Exactly, yep.
So, two, cementness, and that's even more reason. Like, you're not all guaranteed to be Power 5, and you got this check coming. So, like, I understand cold feet and all that, but, geez Louise, there's a lot of reasons for these eight to stick together, in my opinion. You might not ever be a Power 5 again if you bolt, and you're certainly not getting any of that $18 million, which I'm pretty sure every school, no matter who they are, still needs $18 million. Like, all right, so let's close it out. Steve Minnis' second question. The other scenario, Baylor finishes 5-7. What happens to the recruiting class? They finish 5-7, but the announcement comes they're headed to the Pac-12 conference.
Yeah, they're dropping quite a bit. Based on talking to recruits, I would say the Pac-12 is honestly the worst Power 5 option when it comes to recruits. Now, if you're able to join the Big 12 with the Pac-12 and you're playing most of your games still against the Big 12 with the occasional, you know, playing a Pac-12 team, that's different. But if it's just like just Baylor's going to the Pac-12 or something like that, that's going to be really tough because geographically it's just really hard for commits and their families. That's really a big pull of the Big 12 is that you're able to, a lot of parents are able to go see all of your games and various things like that. So combine that with going 5-7, they're probably in the same spot if they were going to the AAC just because they didn't have a good year. But I think future-wise, it still would be more ideal to be in the Pac-12 than the AAC. But if we're just talking about this one year, I think it'd actually be very similar.
Yeah, I don't like the AAC scenario. Outline why. Pac-12, take what you can get at this point. So hopefully it's a power conference, and no point in speculating any further. That's what everybody's doing, and it's not changing anything. So the domino that dropped today that matters is OU and Texas are all but officially out of the Big 12 at this point, and then we'll see what happens from there. But Thursday will be the next step, which will be probably the vote. And the SEC presidents, I would expect that, like you said earlier, be 14-0, 13-1 maybe. And, once that's done, then we'll see. We'll see what happens. But interesting times, and it's always when everything starts to seemingly start to get on a really good track that there's always some wrench that's thrown into things with Baylor in particular. It just always feels like as soon as there's like a little smooth stride, hey, we won like 10 games. Oh, Matt Rule's leaving now. Yeah. Hey, got a brand new coach. Oh, COVID hit. Hey, you know, it's just like it's always something, but hey, that's the way that it is. So we'll keep you updated on the boards, and we'll be obviously discussing this on the radio show this afternoon from 3 until 6 o'clock as well. So, Grayson, anything before we go?
No, just obviously if you're looking for the latest in information, try to join the Sikkim 365 Premium site because we have all kinds of information right now, rumors, reports, sources. We have all kinds of notes and news up on the Premium site, so definitely give it a try if you haven't before. Also, of course, check out Sikkim 365 Radio from 3 to 6 and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well because we have all kinds of content outside of just the radio show each and every day.
Yep, so take advantage of that. And, you know, with all this talk and see people on social media, and it's not always the most fun place to be. So if you're just a Baylor fan looking to, just talk with other Baylor fans and not have to worry about, like, Bevo guy 43, like, jumping in your mentions and harassing you, telling you that Baylor's got no spot left. Like, okay, go on the premium boards, and you'll still argue with people, but you'll at least be fellow Baylor fans for the most part. So definitely check that out. We got a lot of stuff we're ramping up now with football season around the corner and what looks like it'll be the final season of the Big 12 as we knew it. So until next time, Craig Smoke, Grayson Grunhafer, and thanks to Armstrong Sims for producing as well. It's been the Bearcast on Sikkim 365 Radio.